Morning, Council. Welcome to Division 2 of the Court of Appeals. We have two cases set for this morning. The first is Fire Insurance Exchange versus Soto. We have these cases scheduled for 15 minutes per side. The lighting system before you will work in the same manner as you've seen in our courtroom before. When your time commences, the green light will come on. When 10 minutes have expired, the amber light will come on. And when your full 15 minutes have expired, the red light will come on. You should be aware we've read the briefs. We're familiar with the facts as you set them forth. So to the extent you wish to proceed directly to your legal argument, that's fine with us. Please be sure to speak into the microphone because we're recording your arguments as we always do. We find it helpful to go back and listen to them occasionally if we've missed something or if we need clarification. We're ready for argument.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ed Hollop, and I represent the appellant, Pedro Soto, who is seated here at appellant's table. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of appellant's time for rebuttal. This appeal concerns horrific injuries that Mr. Soto sustained while detaching a utility trailer from a pickup truck. And the trial court found that there was no coverage for these injuries based upon the motor vehicle exclusion in the applicable homeowner's policy. The trial court erred because it did not undertake the required analysis to determine whether the use of the motor vehicle and the injuries sustained were causally related. The court failed to undertake the required analysis under the test outlined in State Farm versus Kastner, or under the concurrent causation test found in Northern Insurance Company versus Extra. In Kastner, which is the latest pronouncement by the Colorado Supreme Court with respect to automobile cases and insurance coverage, the court went through the history of the causation requirement with respect to automobile cases and injuries sustained when motor vehicles are involved. And the court came up with a test that is slightly different than what has been in place over the last 30 years or so. In Kastner, the court found that said that there's two prongs now that need to be addressed in order to determine whether or not there's coverage under an insurance policy. The first one is that the vehicle has to be used in a manner contemplated in the applicable policy. And the second is that the use of the vehicle and the injury have to be, quote, directly related or inextricably linked, so that no independent significant act or non-use of the vehicle interrupted the but-for causal chain.
Mr. Hollop, you spent quite a bit of your brief devoted to trying to decide if the trailer was actually a motor vehicle. Is it necessary for us to decide that? Can't the truck qualify as the motor vehicle?
The truck can qualify as the motor vehicle, but it's important for purposes of the Kastner analysis that the trailer not be the motor vehicle. And I think that the trial court, although not explicitly but implicitly in its ruling, decided that the trailer was not the motor vehicle. So the truck is a motor vehicle, and under the two-part test, the first part, you have to determine whether or not there was use of a motor vehicle. So clearly in this case, there was use. There was the loading and unloading of the trailer from the truck. So there,
Mr. Hall, if I can ask you, is it really the unloading of the trailer we're concerned about, or is it the unloading of the dirt? I think there are two possible scenarios, and I'd like you to react to it if you would. You could take the position under Titan and Trujillo that we have a complete operations test if we're loading and unloading, and here, what really was being unloaded and loaded was dirt.
Correct.
They attached the trailer. They went. You know, then they went and picked up the dirt. Then they drove. Then they unloaded the dirt. If you're focused on the, you know, what's being unloaded from this now unit of a truck with a trailer attached being the dirt, it seems to me like you have a problem. You focused immediately on the trailer being unloaded. And I suppose we could have a definitional fight, and I'll ask your friend over here about that, whether you talk about unloading a trailer. But, you know, could you address that issue? Why is it that it's the trailer being unloaded and not the dirt?
Well, I think that, you know, the purpose of the party's trip was to transport this dirt from one area to another and to unload the dirt. So the trial court found, and I think that's, and based on the completed operations doctrine, I think it would be inauthentic for the plaintiff to argue that unhitching the trailer from the truck was not part of the operations that the parties were engaging in. That, you know, they were there to move one dirt from one place to another, and it wouldn't have been completed until all the dirt would have been unloaded. And although they were shoveling it to begin with, the actual unhitching of the trailer from the truck, if you look at the completed operations doctrine, falls within that definition. So I think.
So why don't you lose the case based on what you just admitted?
Because that's the first part of the Kastner test, is you have to look whether or not there was loading or unloading, which is the use. Then, after you determine that there is use, you have to look to see whether or not the truck, which is the motor vehicle, whether there was something, whether that was an implement of harm. Because the first part of the test looks at the use. The second part of the test looks at, okay, what caused the harm? And in Kastner, which was another horrific case, that, you know, rape in the car, there we had use of the seatbelt to restrain the victim. We had use of the vehicle to transport the victim to a remote location. We had use of the seat to, you know, to recline to assist in the commission of the crime. And there, even with all that involvement of the vehicle, the court found that it wasn't inextricably linked, that this could have happened anywhere, and that the use or the presence of the vehicle was just happenstance.
Well, if the test is, as you stated, that there must be direct relationship between the use of the vehicle and the injury, would you not agree that but for the use of this vehicle, this injury would not have occurred?
Well, the but for test is something that, you know, started out in the early 70s. And once again, that's the first part of the second prong of the Kastner test. There has to be but for use of the vehicle. If there isn't but for use of the vehicle, we don't get to the causation test.
Well, the way you stated the test was that the second prong was the use of the vehicle has to be directly related to the harm sustained. And
correct.
My question is, that's the second prong that you're dealing with, that you are hanging your hat on, correct?
Correct.
Why isn't it a simple but for test, but for the use of the truck, if we're focusing on the truck, but for the use of the truck, the injury would not have been sustained?
Because Kastner change the landscape. In addition to just but for, and I can quote from Kastner, where the court said, while occasionally referred to as the but for causal test, we have always required a claimant to show something more than a mere but for relation between the use of the vehicle and the injury. So but for is one part of that second prong. There has to be a relationship between the vehicle and the injury. And in this case, there wasn't.
But in my question to you, that quote from Kastner seems to say you have to prove something beyond but-for test, doesn't it?
Yes. There has to be a but-for link, and then there has to be the harm that was caused has to arise from that motor vehicle.
Right. And if you can't prove but-for, then you lose without even discussing the second part of that statement, don't you?
Well, we're in a little different situation because Kastner was a the plaintiff in that case was looking for coverage under the coverage clause, and here it's the insurance company's burden of proof to show that the exclusion, the motor vehicle exclusion, applies. So
I'm sorry, finish your statement. I interrupted you.
Okay, so with respect to but for. The insurance company has to show that but for the use of the truck, this wouldn't have happened. And clearly, the truck was involved. We can't argue that it wasn't a but-for cause, but the truck itself has to be involved in causing the injury. And in this case, it was the trailer that caused the injury. The truck just happened to be there, and that is part of the history of the causation analysis, that it can't be just the mere situs of an accident.
Mr. Hobb, let me ask you this, and first let me make sure I'm understanding, and I think you've persuaded at least me, or at least my reading of the cases. You're saying there's a but-for test, and it sounds to me like you're conceding but-for here, and then you say there needs to be something beyond but-for, this, you know, the additional causal link that you're talking about. Mike, you and
correct.
I are tracking?
Yes.
All right. And now I'd like you to address, if you would, the Cole case, because I'm not so sure that I'm with you on the fact that Kasner changed the law. Cole also talks about this two-part test. Cole was the case where there's a rifle sitting on the, you know, you're coming back from a hunting trip, the rifle's sitting on the front seat of the car, and the guy gets in, or he's moving the rifle, and he's going to put it in the gun rack, and it gets off, and it discharges, and it kills somebody. And in that case, the court said that arose out of use of the truck because it was foreseeable, whatever else, the truck would be used for a purpose of, or the Jeep there, of going hunting. And so I'm having a little bit of trouble, you know, figuring out how that case is distinct. I think that the case in Kasner is somewhat different because I think the court used the phrase fortuity. One of these cases talking about it was just fortuitous this happened in a car. The fact that it was a terrible sexual assault had nothing to do with necessarily with the use of the car. Of course, Justice Bender dissented along the lines you're presenting to us now. But how do you distinguish Cole, where there's just a rifle sitting on the seat of a car, a parked car, that goes off, and applying the very same test the court said close enough?
Well, it's you know, Cole is one of a number of gunshot and vehicle cases, and the way these cases are resolved are it's very factual specific. In Cole, the shotgun was attached to a gun rack on the dashboard of the Jeep. And I think that was the key fact in Cole, in that there was involvement of the vehicle, namely the gun rack, which was intricately involved with the shooting.
Well, we have that here too, right? I mean, and you've got a problem with, I think, with the Trujillo case, where they're putting a camper shell on. And that's becomes part, the camper shell strikes me as fairly similar to the trailer here.
Well, with Trujillo, there's a lot of problems with Trujillo. First, factually, there, the court said the camper shell is rarely lifted for any other purpose than to be put into a pickup truck, whereas a trailer here can be lifted manually and used for other things. There, the camper shell sat in the bed of a truck. It became part of the truck. Here, we have a trailer that it is attached to the hitch on the back of the truck.
Mr. Hall, you have 3 minutes left.
Thank you. So there's small factual differences in that case. And also, the tiny factual differences is what makes or breaks these kinds of cases. For example, all the gun shootings, we have 5 cases, 3 of which found coverage under the automobile policy, that being Kung La, Colorado Farm Bureau, and Cole. And there's 2, Azar and Mason, where there wasn't coverage found. So it's very fact specific. And in our case, if you look at the mechanism of injury, which is the trailer falling on Mr. Soto's leg, and if you look at what was the negligence that caused that, it all relates to the trailer. It all arises out of failure to appreciate how much dirt was in the trailer. Failure to have a hit or something for the trailer to rest on should it fall. Failure to move the dirt to the back of the trailer. Failure by Mr. Kelly to hold on to it, letting it slip and falling on Mr. Soto's leg. There was everything related to that trailer. The fact that the truck was there is tenuous. It, like the pictures we have in the record, the trailer could have been sitting on a block of wood. These two individuals could have went there, picked it up to dump it, and it would have fallen on his leg and still caused the injury. One of the things we look at is, can you remove the vehicle from this fact pattern, and can this accident still happen without the presence of that vehicle? And in this case, it can. And that is the fact that will back, like in the gun cases, makes it coverage should be found as opposed to coverage not be found. Also, in Trujillo, the causation test that the court used was a showing that the injury originated, grew out of, or flowed from the use of the vehicle. And that is no longer the test. And I'd submit that under the Kastner reformulation of the causation test, that Trujillo is no longer good law. I believe my time is just about up, so I will.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm John Lebsack and I represent Fire Insurance Exchange. I want to focus on the case law, but for just a minute, go back and recap the scenario of this use and unloading. This was a pickup which had a trailer hitch on the back, meaning that one of the normal uses of that vehicle was to haul a trailer. It came from the factory that way. It was designed with that contemplated as a normal use of the vehicle. This project that Mr. Soto and Mr. Kelly were engaged in was to move dirt from one location to another. Either it was the distance or the size of the dirt, we don't know that, but they were using the trailer with the pickup to pull it to move this dirt. The project had not been completed. They had a load of dirt that they had taken to the destination and they were in the process of unloading it, partially unloaded, and they decided to unhitch it as part of the unloading process.
So your position, Mr. Lebsack, is that the dirt is what's being unloaded?
Both were being unloaded. I don't think it matters to your decision on whether or not there's coverage, whether you look at it as whether the trailer was being unloaded of dirt or whether the truck was being unloaded of the trailer.
Well, wouldn't we have, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Wouldn't we have an issue of pure language, whether you talk about unloading a trailer hitch from a car? I mean, there's at least an argument that that's not the normal English uses of that language. You talk about unhitching, but you don't talk about unloading a trailer.
Well, I submit that if a truck is designed to haul cargo, that anything related to hauling cargo is unloading. So if part of the unloading process, if there's a trailer hitch that you use a trailer to haul the cargo with, and discharging the cargo and unloading the trailer, connecting the trailer, that's all processed.
Would you concede, I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you, my apologies. Would you concede that there is at least an argument, let's take the hypothetical that we're just talking about unloading or unhitching the trailer. Would you concede that there is an argument at least that unloading is not a natural use of the word in terms of removing the trailer from the truck?
I will concede that if somebody's standing by the hitch and disconnecting it, that the word that first comes to mind would be unhitching,
right,
and not unloading.
And then where I was really going with my questions here is why? And I think no one disputes here that if there's ambiguity, an ambiguous insurance clause is going to be construed against in favor of coverage.
That's true.
But if we get to ambiguity. Why don't we at least have a fact question here that would have made summary judgment improper?
Because there are about four or five other routes to affirmance without getting into that particular term. Because if there's clear language that results in a finding as a matter of law of no coverage, then you don't have to address an ambiguity that isn't involved in the decision. There are several ways to affirm this result.
I'd like to ask you about the Trujillo case. In that case, I suppose you could say you hitch or unhitch a camper shell, but they said specifically that the unhitching of the camper shell was unloading. And so does that change your answer to Judge Gabriel's question?
Well, I think Trujillo is a very important case for us because the term in these policies, in all the policies, is use, loading, or unloading. There are a lot of, you know, the term use has been broadly interpreted, but Trujillo was a case where, like pulling a trailer with a hitch, this pickup was designed to fit on a camper shell. And the camper shell, from the facts of that case, was being jacked up in the air, and the pickup was not even underneath it. It was several feet away. So the injury happened while the camper shell was being jacked up, and the opinion says the pickup was a few feet away, and then the jack fell over and that caused the injury. Judge Plank in that case found that was still use of the pickup. So I think that is a very helpful case for us because it shows that, for one thing, the vehicle does not have to be in motion to be in use. There are many cases that say that. And then the other thing that's very important for this case is that the person injured does not have to be right next to the vehicle that is being used, with that, you know, the use is the operative term, at the time of the injury. In that Trujillo case, the pickup was several feet away, and Mr. Trujillo was injured by the shell that fell before it was even attached to the pickup. So let me get to Judge Gabriel's question about if there's an ambiguity, isn't that a problem? We don't believe so, and that's because there are several ways that you can affirm. And let me back up to how the policy is structured. The exclusion has several terms. And let me back up. This is a homeowner's policy, and it is a dovetail, so to speak, with auto and vehicle policies. And if you look at what Justice Erickson said in the Northern Insurance versus Ekstrom, which I don't think has anything dispositive about that case, but he did make the observation that insurance coverage dovetails, a business of insurance dovetails. So this homeowner's policy dovetails with auto insurance, vehicle insurance. It's not supposed to, homeowners is not supposed to cover use of the vehicle. So anything related to use of a vehicle is over with the auto policy. So the exclusion in this homeowner's policy says that if the injury results from ownership, maintenance, use, loading, or unloading of a motor vehicle, there's no coverage. So there are three words there, actually two, that will get us there. If it's use of a motor vehicle, no coverage. If it's unloading, there's no coverage. So then we look at, well, what's a motor vehicle? And again, there are two routes there. One, you can look at the truck as a motor vehicle. There's no dispute the truck is a motor vehicle under the definition. There is some dispute about whether the trailer was, but I'll get to that in a minute. So if the truck was being used or the truck was being unloaded, there's no coverage. If the trailer was being used or the trailer was being unloaded, there's no coverage.
Well, for the trailer to be used, though, it would have to be the motor vehicle.
Correct. Right. Okay. That is correct. So for the exclusion to apply versus the trailer, you have to, you know, say that the trailer constituted a motor vehicle, which means, was it being towed? That's the key thing. If the trailer was not being towed, then it doesn't qualify as a motor vehicle under the policy.
At the exact moment in time that the injury occurred, the trailer had been unhitched from the vehicle. So you're not contending that it was being towed, are you?
Yes, we are. And that is because of the way that other courts have interpreted that phrase. And let me get back to how this accident happened. We've cited a number of cases from other states on situations where a trailer disconnected and was going down the highway being pulled, and it disconnected and it rolled off and hit somebody and hurt somebody. And the courts in those cases uniformly say that that is being towed.
But weren't those all moving vehicles?
Yes.
When it disconnected?
Yes. But I submit to you that the motion is not the key thing. The key thing is what propelled the activity of the trailer that caused the injury. So if you look, there's two ways to look at this. The physics are the same. In this case, the trailer was being held in place because it was attached to the ball on the back of the pickup. It was unstable. As soon as it was let go, it moved and caused these injuries to Mr. Soto. It's the same thing as if you're moving the trailer behind a pickup, and the pickup is what sets in motion the trailer. This is just the opposite situation, where there was force being applied to hold the trailer in place. That was the pickup. You remove the pickup, and the instability of that trailer had nothing to hold it back, and then it moved. So that's why we disagree with the appellant's argument that the pickup was doing nothing more than just a tree stump. This was not just sitting there as a, you know, something that the trailer could sit on.
Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Lipsack. If you had a little different factual scenario, this trailer and truck, both hitched still together, stayed there for 5 days before anybody attempted to do anything with it. Same result?
I believe so, because there's lots of cases that say that the vehicles don't have to be in motion to be in use, because there are uses of vehicles other than movement. And there are plenty of cases that, you know, involve that. Let me just look at the Trujillo case. That was a camper shell. The Cole case, that was a Jeep that was sitting still.
And in both those cases, you had definite involvement of the motor vehicle, because they were having to lift the camper shell to put it onto the truck. And the actual instrumentality of harm, the rifle in the Cole case, was inside the truck itself.
Yeah, but I still think that lifting the act of disconnecting the tongue of the trailer from the hitch, that's every bit as causally connected to the truck as having a gun in the gun rack go off.
Mr. Leifert, if I can ask you, and you're hearing a theme in my questions, I'm sure. I understand your argument about causal connection, and I understand, you know, you'll say, of course, there was. There's a lot of questions in this case. What was being loaded or unloaded? Was it the trailer or the dirt? What's the motor vehicle? Is it the trailer or is it the truck? Was there causation? And we could talk about, as Mr. Holub said, you look at all the gun cases. Some come out one way and some come out the other way, because they're very factually specific. You're dealing with two provisions of law, I think, that tend to operate against you. Ambiguity is going to get construed against your client, and if we've got a fact question, summary judgment was not proper. I'm just being candid with you, I have some concern here. There seems to me a lot of factual questions and ambiguities here, and I'm questioning, and I'd like you to address, why is summary judgment proper in this case with all these different questions? You're a fine lawyer, Mr. Hobbs a fine lawyer, and you're presenting very strong arguments on both sides. Why don't we have a fact question here?
Well, there's certainly no fact question about what the language of the contract says. And I disagree that there's any ambiguities in the contract, but as I said before, that there are, you don't have to decide if it's the truck or the trailer, and if you go the wrong way, or, you know, you go one way or the other, causes reversal.
Well, let me.
So you can go either way, but let me get to the fact question. Let me try to answer that question. The facts of the accident are taken from two affidavits from Mr. Soto, and I think that they are complete in terms of explaining what happened with enough clarity and enough detail to put into effect these contract provisions. So you look at the two affidavits, and it describes exactly what happened in the accident. I'm trying to think about what fact question could exist as to, you know, what happened in the accident, because it's pretty clear from those affidavits that they were unhitching the trailer in order to tip it up. The trailer was unstable. One of the theories of negligence was that Mr. Kelly didn't have a good grip on the trailer, and if he would have had a good grip, it wouldn't have moved, or he should have blocked the wheels. So from that, the fact that the instability of the trailer as it was sitting on the ground was why the tongue swung around and hit him. So I don't believe there are any questions of fact from those two affidavits that would prevent application of these provisions in the insurance policy.
Lipsack, your opposing counsel posited the idea that it's your burden to prove the exclusion is applicable, and therefore it's your burden to show something beyond the but-for involvement of the truck. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. I concede that, because we have to prove the exclusion applies, and so we have to prove that this was use or unloading. So And I do agree with Mr. Holub that Kastner changed previous cases that may have said that it's a simple but-for. It's more than that. It's a causal relationship. And if you don't find that causal relationship, then you don't find that the injury was the result of the use. So, yes, I do agree that that is a requirement here, that we have to prove two elements. One is that this was the use of the vehicle was part of its normal use. And I don't think there's any question about that as far as, you know, pulling a trailer, unhitching a trailer. The particular act of, you know, detaching the hitch to unload the dirt, if you look at these cases, use has been defined very broadly, and so has unloading. And I would ask the court to consider what the Titan case ruled 20 or 30 years ago, which is this complete operation test for unloading. And that basically said that loading and unloading, that process doesn't end until the whole thing is done, until the actual, you know, the unloading process is completed.
You're out of time, but finish your
thought. I'm sorry.
Go ahead and finish the thought.
So we believe that under either use or unloading, the trial court was correct. Thank you.
Thank you. Paul, you had about 30 seconds. I'll give you another 30 seconds because we allowed Mr. Lepsak to go over a little bit. So you've got about a minute for rebuttal. Okay.
Mr. Lepsak referred to instability of the trailer as being a causative link. Well, if you take that premise, it's instability with the dirt inside the trailer, which has to do with the trailer. That has nothing to do with the motor vehicle or that truck. And although he admitted that he has the burden to show the causative link, he never addressed the causation facts in this case, which were in Mr. Soto's affidavit about all things that were done wrong that caused this injury, all of which, every single one, had to do with that trailer. There's nothing that truck did that caused his injury. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your arguments this morning. The case will stand submitted. We will issue a written opinion to you in due course. The court will be taking a recess momentarily, and we'd encourage the attorneys to stay and answer questions from the students. We'll be gone about 15 minutes, so hopefully that will give you some opportunity to talk to the students.